Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 75 and a half. It is a bonus edition content right now coming your way. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee, unfortunately, is not with me here in Germany. Hamburg, not Hamburg. Get it right. But a couple people that are. Our main man, Abby Subban.
What's up?
And our good friend from London and the Sun, Simon Head.
Hello.
All right, UFC Fight Night 93 is in the books. We're at the Radisson Blu lobby right now. The party is going on all around us. I actually just got off of an elevator with Bruce Buffer, who had one lady in each arm.
Gangster.
He's not rolling as deep as usual this week, though.
Yeah, he's taking a light. He says he's on a little bit of a diet, so he's holding it up. We did finish up with UFC Fight Night 93 a couple hours earlier tonight. Let's talk about the main event right away. Josh Barnett picked up a big third-round submission win over Andre Arlovski. I guess pretty much the exact way Simon had called it, as his gesturing over here would seem to indicate. Patting himself on the back as much as he can. Careful with your elbow there.
Yeah, I'm doing my best.
A great scene. It was a sellout, and the crowd here in Hamburg showed up early. This was my first trip to Germany. I thought the crowd was awesome. I mean, yeah, they booed a couple times along the way, but the times they booed were kind of the times that you could boo, you know? And they got treated to what I think ended up being a fantastic main event. I had picked Andre Arlovski going into that fight, and I didn't know what was going on about the first 30 seconds where they just went and started trading toe-to-toe. But once it started settling into a little bit of a rhythm, I felt kind of okay with my Andre Arlovski pick, and then it all went wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it was – they both fought like a couple of guys who had a cab waiting. they just went for it straight from the gun, and both of them – they pretty much dropped each other. Both of them basically took a knee during those exchanges, and it looked like it was just a matter of time before someone gets KO'd in that first round. And eventually common sense prevailed and they kind of calmed down a little bit and settled into a slightly more regular fight pattern. Josh Barnett went to his bread and butter, which was his catch wrestling. He spoke about it in the lead up to the fight. He spoke about it in the post-fight press conference. And he really did sap Arlovski's strength. I mean, he'd wobbled him early on with a couple of good punches. But Arlovski was basically winning the majority of the stand-up exchanges.
I thought so too.
He got him up against the fence and just wore on him. Just really did. Just wear on him. And at the end of that second round, Arlovski went back to his stall and he was spent. I was looking across the cage at him and he was really struggling to sort of get air in. He was in a bad way. And then in that third round, Barnett really turned it up. There was one moment right in front of us, yep. And I remember we spoke about it. Barnett hit Arlovski with a peach of an uppercut.
Perfect.
And we saw Arlovski's eyes roll back in his head.
Yep.
He was out.
He was out on his feet.
He was out. He took half a step back. His head cleared. And then he came flying back with a salvo of punches. Mm-hmm. And it was like, how is he still doing this? His ability.
Well, I mean, that was pure instinct alone.
It really was. He was running on autopilot, but it was probably only 30 seconds or so after that that Barnett eventually took him to the mat, battered him with some ground strikes, and eventually Arlovski, through exhaustion as much as anything else, I think, gave up his back pretty much.
Yeah, I think so too.
And the tap, when it came very, very quickly.
Yeah, Abby, I mean, we were watching it cage side. Simon Head was sitting right next to me tonight, and we were getting the feel from in the building. You know, these are two legends of the sport, and I mean, I don't use that term a lot, but I think they both qualify as legends of the sport. I mean, the things that they've accomplished in their time.
Both champions?
100%. And, you know, there were moments where, I mean, it's heavyweight MMA. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't Jarvis Dano, Christopher Colombo type of heavyweight MMA, but they were starting to get a little bit tired. There were some moments where, you know, there were some maybe not flyweight-esque technical exchanges. You end up watching the fights on a monitor because you're working in the back. We were watching cage side. I think, I guess, maybe because there were some ebbs and flows and because, as you said, Simon, you know, they were hitting each other hard. You were seeing some nice flurries. That it was fairly exciting. Did it play out that way on a monitor? What were you guys in the back thinking as this thing was unfolding? Because I can see, because to me it was fun, but I can also see some area for criticism.
All right. It didn't come across that way on TV. It was, the first 20 seconds was like two cars colliding and Okay, what Andre said in the post-fight press conference was like, he didn't knock me out, he choked me out.
Right. But,
and he kind of took that as like as a badge of honor,
right,
honor because of his chin and, you know. But the reason why he didn't get knocked out or Barnett didn't follow up on anything, because Barnett got hit, tagged as well. So I think at that point, both of them had no clue what they were doing, and they were just swinging for the fences. You know what I mean?
God bless him.
Yeah, it was awesome. But yeah, as you said, as the flow picked up, it kind of like everyone was so excited in the back. Was like, oh, I was down. I was looking at my. I was editing something when it kicked off, and it was Louise from MMA Crazy that was just shrieking with excitement. So I looked, and I could see them going at it.
And it was an insane start.
It was insane. But then that's probably why people were booing, because it was so exciting on the feet.
Right.
But Barnett, like Simon said, he went to his strength and utilized his wrestling. And that's all right. I mean, this is an educated crowd that we have here.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, if it starts like that and then it dips, that's it didn't come across as well as you guys are saying on TV. I mean,
no, that's fair.
That's in my opinion. I mean, you guys can check it out.
It's interesting. I will say this, man. I walk away from this fight with a lot of respect for Josh Barnett. Not that I didn't have it already, but when he got poked in the eye, it was obvious that it bothered him, and he turned away. Arlovski did the right thing. The ref didn't see it. Ref didn't stop it, so he kept coming, threw some punches. So for Barnett to gather his wits back about him, and then to start the finishing sequence of the fight, you know, it's pretty incredible when you think about the fact that, you know, he was obviously in some real pain there. And I have a lot of respect for him, too, because he said afterwards, I'm not bitter. Like, that wasn't cheap. I mean, the ref didn't say stop, so Andre should have kept fighting.
Absolutely. And as it happened, I honestly thought he was going to verbally submit. I thought he'd basically had enough. But all it was just the whole fight or flight thing.
Because he was getting wobbled a bit on the feet.
He was. And you know, he got caught with a thumb, I think he said, and it was inadvertent. And he was at pains to say in a post-fight press conference that no ill will towards Arlovski whatsoever.
Yep.
He also said that Arlovski was grabbing him at the inside of his glove, which is...
he did. That was kind of funny to throw that there. By the way, not that I have a problem with
this. I have no problem, but he was blatantly cheating.
Yeah.
He was blatantly cheating, but it's all fine. You know, we're having a fist fight. It's all good. But, yeah, I mean, both of those guys had to overcome some adversity in that fight, and... at the end of the day, you know, the toughest man in there on the night won, and it was the War Master, and he's still got something to give in this heavyweight division. I think I said before the fights, he's got a unique set of skills. There aren't that many people in the heavyweight division who have the sort of skill set that he has. He's very unorthodox, even in his striking.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big lump to move around the cage, so he's not really going to get physically dominated by anybody. His upper body strength, even though he hasn't got that chiseled physique,
right,
but his upper body strength is phenomenal from the waist
100%.
Up. 100%. And his ability to absorb punishment and keep coming forward. And his cardio is vastly underrated, mm-hmm, as well, because that was a fast-paced, hard-going fight. And he outlasted Arlovski. He took the best that Arlovski could offer. And he came back. Even with a thumb in the eye, he came back, and he broke Andrei Arlovski.
I agree. It was a big win for Josh Barnett. Could set up some other big fights for him. The heavyweight division. I don't know if a title shot's in his future, but certainly some big fights. Let's hear from the War Master.
Certainly a big win for you tonight. Wild start to the fight. I mean, can you talk about, you know, how hurt you were during that opening exchange, and if that changed the way that you had to approach the rest of the fight?
Actually, I was never hurt in the fight. That's more due to having, I don't know, some sort of either a abnormally thick skull or very little brain matter to really be damaged in the first place. I think if you really did take a look at the library of fights that I've had, I've taken pretty much the best shots from the hardest strikers and still stood in front of people. So, you know, taking a hard punch is not a big deal. If anything, I felt like the first, it took me until really the third, I felt like things finally started to settle down some. I don't know if it was just both of our energy, or Andre's a bit, he comes at you a bit wild, savage almost, you know? I mean, not to play a caricature with the fangs, but why not? But I mean, either at one point I'm shielding and moving, and I'm seeing him throw right hand after right hand after, and he's just throwing the one punch. And I'm thinking, well, that's absolutely apeshit. I'm not going to get hit with all those. But you know, I just felt like I was getting pulled a bit in a bit of a wild exchange as well. And it took time to settle into it. I didn't think he would try to take me down, but when he did, I felt like in the first, I felt like I watched him do it. And I remember when he did, he went more trip than block. And Bader could probably tell you, he'll agree with me, if you're going for trips, they're great when they work. But if you've got a trip and a body lock, that means you have no post. So the second time he did it, I knew he was going to step and try to trip, and he's got his hands wrapped around me. Where is he going to post? Just like if you shoot a double with an outside trip. If someone hips into you, you go over. So he went over. And after that, you know, once we started going, I just felt like as the fight went on, regardless of whether I was feeling any fatigue at all, I just felt like he was going to be feeling more fatigue. But I just want to get back out there and just keep working. Let's just keep fighting. Let's keep throwing stuff down. I would like to see what happens after he settles. And, hey, let's really box. You know what I mean? Let's smooth it out a bit. But, you know, went back to catch wrestling. Dropped him over with a turnover from a double wrist lock after the eye gouge. And just from there, it was academic.
I did want to ask you about the eye gouge. I mean, obviously, you guys are told to keep fighting until the referee steps in. But did you take issue with Andre continuing to attack at that point?
No, that's his job. The ref doesn't tell you to stop. You're not supposed to stop. You know, his job is not to go out there and be my best friend. This isn't the best friend making competition. This is the ultimate fighting championship. I hold no grudges against him. He was grabbing the inside of my glove too. Blatantly illegal. Don't hold any grudges about it. In the least. Only more disappointed that I didn't do it first. But, you know, he gave a lot to me tonight. He came to win. And I really appreciated him being there and trying to give the fans out there a great fight.
Josh, can you give us a few words about catch wrestling in regards to your game plan? Your fight tonight, and also the place of catch wrestling in modern MMA, you know, your opinion about that. Thank you.
Well, you know, I am a catch wrestler. I come from a wrestling background. I wrestled in high school. I went to the junior nationals, did in freestyle and Greco. I'm a wrestler. And for me, catch wrestling is just an extension of that. It was so much easier for me to put things in that kind of perspective from that wrestling background. And you know, collegiate wrestling is just watered down catch. That's all it is. I mean, the positions are the same. And if you look at the old rule books for collegiate wrestling, they'll say no wrist locks, no chanceries. You know, basically the names of the holds that we're using all the time. You know, I use a double wrist lock to get that reversal, and was attacking for it. You know, people call it a Kimura, but they'd be wrong. And then you know, but that's the type of wrist locks they're talking about. And you know, the first trip takedown, like I said, you know, we ended up down there. I was playing off my back, kind of curious where we were going to go from this. You know, I didn't want to overly commit because I felt like, you know, Andre was waiting to see for opportunity. And, you know, I didn't want to open myself up to something really nasty. So after that, once we started grappling in the corner, I looked for the takedown a few times, but he was really strong. And then by that, when we got in the third round, it was a matter of isolating that arm to look for the opportunity instead of, you know, doing something more, I guess what most people would consider standard, in grabbing a leg or going for the body lock or something like that. But that double wrist lock turnover is something that I do all the time. And I think that it's got a great application for modern MMA, especially with so many great wrestlers transitioning over that already exist. I think it fits into what they already do so much better than any other style of submission wrestling.
And so Carl Gotch was with you tonight?
Carl was with me, Billy was with me. You know, all the great guys from Catch that I've had such an opportunity to be able to learn under. So tonight, you know, I used what they've given me to be able to get in the position to come out on top.
So you've had ups and downs in your career. You just listened to Bader say he's pretty much given up on the idea of a title shot. Where do you stand on the idea of a title shot? Is there some sort of benchmark that you've set for yourself as to what you need to accomplish in the UFC by a certain time, or are you just...
No, I don't think in those sort of modalities. I think of just being able to perform at my best any given moment, you know, completely living in that that immediate now. So, you know, at this point, you know, guys like me or Andre, we've already won belts. I think we've already, you know, there's, and you've got Overeem, you've got, there's a slew of guys out there, of us in the heavyweight division that have already proven that we are capable of being the world champion anywhere you put us. And, you know, we're always ready to take the challenge, and it's always acceptable for us to be in the title fight. If Overeem got injured out of nowhere somewhat, Andre, myself, whomever, like, there are some of us out there that can slide right in and fight in that match, and that's completely legitimate. And but the biggest thing that we can control is going out there and our performances that lie in front of us, you know, one at a time. And you know, I'm sure a heavyweight championship fight could be in the future. But right now, all I was concerned with was fighting Andre, taking him very seriously, and doing what I could to come out on top, and then, you know, moving on from there.
How is your eye right now?
My what?
Your eye.
Oh, it's okay. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know if it makes me look better or worse or what have you. But you know, it is what it is. It just happens. And even in the replay, I could see it. You know, he was throwing punches and maneuvering. He just had an open hand and caught a thumb. You know, no big deal.
All right, Josh Barnett is victorious at UFC Fight Night 93. Meanwhile, in the main event, Andrei Arlovski comes up short. Heartbreaking, man. He's had a rough year. 0-3. And Andrei is one of those good guys, man. It's funny. He's intimidating in some ways, but he's also, you know, hilarious and warm and cool in others. And to see him sitting up there at these press conferences, heartbroken, but saying that, hey, man, I've still got something left. What do you think, Gabby? I mean, this is a tough run, man. Three finishes and three losses. You know, you said it, two knockouts. He's like, well, at least I didn't get knocked out this time. I guess that's a good way to look at it. I don't know.
Yeah, he's looking on the bright side.
Yeah, like, at least there's a little silver lining. I mean, what do you think? He says, listen, and it's a fair point. He says, listen, man, I lost to two guys who are fighting for the title next week, and I lost to a guy who's pretty damn good. You know, we just called him a legend. What do you think? I mean, is there something left for Andrei Arlovski, or should he start thinking about walking away?
Nah. I'd like to see Andrei give it. I mean, if he says he's still got it, I'd like to see what he's got.
Right.
I mean, Andre's a legend, like you said. Like, and it is heartbreaking seeing him. Like you said, you've seen him. You've been to every fight that he's in the last three fights.
Yeah.
And you're just seeing him at every press conference with a loss, mm-hmm. You know? But yeah, I don't know if he's still in talks for the title in that picture, but I don't know, man. I still get psyched up for a Andre fight.
Yeah, he's still a star of the sport. I think there's no doubt about that. I think there's still a market for him at some point.
I think so. I think, and this is always the key for me when you look at fighters and they start to drop off just a little bit, and the main considerations here are basically how they want to continue their career. If Arlovski is of the mind that he wants to continue to go for the title, that means he's going to be in there with these absolute killers at the top of the division. Mm-hmm. And if he's consistently getting stopped by these guys, particularly if he's getting TKO'd and KO'd, then it comes, you know, there comes the point where the UFC maybe have to have the talk with him. However, that doesn't mean he shouldn't be able to continue to have a career in the UFC. It might just mean he has to take a slightly lower level of opposition, maybe slightly lower in the top 10, find his level a little bit. If he's finding he's getting consistently beaten by the top five, mm-hmm. Let's look from 6 to 10.
Right.
See how he sits. And you know, we had Ryan Bader on the card was talking earlier tonight about he's not that bothered about title shots right now.
I don't believe that.
And fighters are beginning to think like that in some cases. And for someone like Andrei Arlovski, if he isn't realistically a title contender anymore, and that's a conversation for him and the UFC to have, If he isn't, then the question needs to be asked to Andre, do you still want to fight, even though realistically you're not really in the title picture anymore?
Right.
And if he's happy to do that, I don't see any problem with him continuing his career. If he continues having these sorts of KO, TKO stoppages as he drops down, that's when the red light comes on and you have to say, okay, you might have to look after yourself and hang up the gloves, you know?
But saying that, like John mentioned that he's fought against two people that are actually fighting to get, he's had losses to two people that are fighting for the title next week, yeah? So, I've lost my train of thought there.
He's been getting beaten by the very best guys in the division, right? Yeah. So it's you know, yeah. So it's like, that, isn't it?
If he's going to be going, I mean, this is the heavyweight division. Two fights. He could win his next two fights and he'll be
right back.
We'll be talking about him again, you know? It's the heavyweight division. It's like anything can happen. It's like two cars colliding. Just like bang. Who takes the most damage?
Right.
And I just think Andre's just been asleep behind the wheel kind of thing, you know?
And for Andre, you've been through losing skids in your career before, lost several multiple fights in a row. Is it too early to say what comes next? Have you given any thought as to what the plan is at this point, or you know, take some time?
Well, first of all, Josh, great fight. Congratulations. He was better man today, tonight. Yeah, I lost the third fight. Now I'm going to take some time off, and I'm going to come back stronger. At least he did knock me out, so he choked me. And he has a great wrestling skill, so...
I tried.
So he was better man tonight. Thank you very much for the fight, and good luck him in the future. I'm still top 10. So it's totally up to my managers what's next for me, and totally up to UFC.
I just like to add one thing, and that is I know Andre didn't lose tonight, but you know it's not just about winning and losing out here. If you look at all the people that he's fought over the years, who I've fought over the years, you know, we have wins and we have losses against all-time greats. So it's not so trivial, you know what I mean? So you know, one of his recent losses was Overeem, who's in a title fight, you know, or Stipe, who's the champion. So it's not like we're going out there and fighting the bum of the month club. You know, we're going out there and we're fighting the best out there that the world can provide. So, you know, if we lose a few, well, you know, it happens. But who else besides us is capable of going out there and meeting, you know, that kind of opposition time and time again?
Great speech.
So just quickly for Andre, I know you came to get the win tonight, but it was a great show. I mean, it was a fun fight. You guys got fight of the night. How do you feel about your performance this evening?
Not so much, but it is what it is. Like I said, Josh was better man tonight. We're gonna sit down with our coaches. We're gonna see what's going on, what was wrong during my camp, and we're gonna move forward. I still top 10, and I lost two guys who's gonna fight next weekend for the title. Another guy, Josh Barnett, he's tough, no doubt, and. I still have fire in my eyes, so I'm ready to go.
So Andre Arlovski, disappointing loss for him. All right, let's talk about the co-main event, Alexander Gustafsson. First of all, can we just say Sweden travels well, man? That was that play. It felt like we were in Stockholm in there, man. There were so many damn Swedish fans. I thought it was a really cool atmosphere. I thought they really showed up. And I will say this, I think this was a smart fight by Alexander Gustafsson. We kind of said it going in, Jan Błachowicz is not the fighter that Gustafsson is, but a dangerous man nonetheless, and he was coming out throwing bombs. And it was funny because at first, Alex was like, I'm going to throw in, let's do this, you know? And then I think he realized, like, oh, no, this would be incredibly dumb of me to sit here and go toe-to-toe, because he got popped up right away, man. His eye got busted up very early on. And, you know, maybe not the most exciting way to win a fight and just take it to the ground every time, but I thought, to me, incredibly intelligent.
Absolutely. And the thing with the traveling support, James Elliott said in the press conference that I think 30% of the tickets sold for tonight's event was sold outside of Germany.
That's crazy.
And I'm guessing probably 25% went to Sweden because it was like a home game for the Swedish
it
guys
was.
Tonight. And, yeah, and as you say, I think – and actually, I think it's a bit of a theme of tonight's event. fighters using their brain to win the fights. Mm-hmm. Josh Barnett was getting lit up a little bit on the feet, went to his bread and butter, won the fight. Alexander Gustafsson was standing in there trading toe-to-toe, but was being given as good as he got by Jan Blachowicz, who certainly early on looked as good as I think we've seen him in the UFC.
Oh yeah, he was ready for this fight.
You know, and then very wisely and with the guidance of his corner, so I understand, who were hollering at him to take him down, Gustafsson listened to his corner, went to his takedown, and once the fight hit the mat, the skills gap was big. And that made a difference.
Yeah,
and also,
Jan couldn't get up. I mean, he didn't take a ton of damage. He didn't get just totally, you know, beat up and manhandled. He did a good job.
He was controlled, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was always able to get back to guard. Even when Alex would make some passes, he would get back to guard. So I thought he did a good job. But, it was obvious that he wasn't going to be able to get himself up. This was a big win for Alexander Gustin. Abby's sitting in there at the post-fight press conference. I mean, I totally understand, like, going in, and you guys talked to him ahead of time. You know, Alex, like, almost seemed, I don't want to say angry, but annoyed at, like, don't ask me about John Jones, don't ask me about the title, don't ask me that. But once the fight was over, I was like, listen, you know, I asked him at the press conference, what do you want to do next? And it was somebody else asked it first. I think he's like, we'll just see what the UFC has. Cool, okay. But what do you want is kind of the question I followed up with him. And would it be that John Jones fight? Because to me right now, I think it would make a hell of a lot of sense. Now, we still don't know what's up with John Jones. I still believe he's going to be facing some type of suspension. If not from USADA, then from Nevada. But, you know, if they do Daniel Cormier versus Anthony Johnson, like I think they should, and not like Dana has hinted at, if they do that, that leaves John Jones out there. And, I mean, that's a rematch that I think a lot of people want to see. John Jones versus Alexander Gustafsson 2. It's a hell of a big fight. I think, it would be for an interim title, so it could be a pay-per-view headliner. And I think it's a fight that Alex should want. And for whatever reason, he basically just said, I don't know. I think that was a missed opportunity. What do you think, Abby?
I was happy to see Gus back.
Yeah.
And like I said on the previous episode, was, you know, they're ex-sparring partners. And that's exactly why I think Gus came in with such confidence, that they've sparred together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I didn't think... Jan, that's exactly what they are. Sorry, sparring partners. In sparring, you don't go 100%. Mm-hmm. They're not swinging for the fences. And Gus looked genuinely surprised when he got hit by one of Jan's punches. He was like, what? All right, I better take him down. You know what I mean? But the way, it's just, what is this stuff we're drinking, John? I keep losing my train of thought.
You're just like about to pass out over
No,
there?
I'm good. I'm just saying.
It's Kostritzer?
Kostriker?
It's called Kostritzer. Kostritzer Schwarzbier.
Is the German beer a little
it's
too strong for
It's a dark
you?
Beer.
I don't know. But yeah, okay, so.
Wow. What did you go outside and smoke earlier?
Nothing. What are you talking about? I don't smoke, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, Alexander Gustafsson, fantastic win for him.
It was good to see Gus back. It's good to see Gus back, but I just don't think he underestimated Jan, and that's why he took him down. Like Simon said, that he was his corner was screaming for the takedown because there was no head movement and he was getting popped.
I'm not sure Abby may have been on some of Nate Diaz's CBD.
Jeez,
that's
man.
What I'm saying.
God.
Yeah.
Giggling like a schoolgirl over there.
All right. Well, while Abby sorts out his head over there, the rest of us are going to get some frosty beverages. You're cut off.
Thanks.
Let's listen
now. I've got some editing to do, man.
Let's listen to Alexander Gustin. Yeah, you got some editing to do. You need to edit that mind of yours right now.
Alex, it was your first fight in 11 months. Did you feel the pressure was on with the loss? That would mean you would have four losses in five fights. Did you feel it was a do or die situation?
No, not really. I just felt good to be back in the octagon and having fun in the cage. So it felt good.
You're still on the top of the in top of the light heavyweight division. How do you see the division progressing from here?
Well, I don't know. I just take one fight at a time right now. So let's see what the next challenge is.
I asked Alex if the game plan was taken down from the beginning, or was it something that he did during the fight change? And
yeah, I went in there with an open mind, and I was just waiting to see his move, and I took it from there.
Vad väntar du nu? Vad är det du känner att du vill göra härnäst?
So, jag svarar på engelska då. So from now I'm just going to take, I'm going to enjoy the swim for a couple of days and then see what the next challenge is. Let's see what the UFC have for me. Let's see what happens.
How fast can you be back on track?
I'm already back on track. I'm going back to work and keep improving my game and trying to be as accomplished a good MMA fighter I can be.
For Alex, please. Of course, it's up to the UFC what comes next for you. But I wonder if there's something specifically you do want. Like, what would you like to see next? Because I know you didn't want to talk about John Jones, and we still really don't know what's going on with him. But I mean, if it is Cormier versus Johnson next, does it seem like it might be a good time to go back to that fight?
Honestly, I just I don't really care that much. I just my focus on being like getting back to that W and start winning again. It's been a tough year last year, so I feel great to be back in the octagon and compete again. So let's see what the challenge are, and let's see what's next, what opponent they want for me, and I take it from there. And of course, my big focus and my goal is to be, to be a contender again and compete for that championship belt again.
Good stuff, Gus. Obviously, good win tonight. You're back on track. The man just across there, Ryan Bader, also got a good win tonight. He's ranked higher than you. Is that a fight that you fancy in the future?
Let's see what happens. I'm up for suggestions.
Ryan, what do you think?
We'll face each other at some point. Next time, time after, who knows? You never know what's going to go on, especially with John Jones and the whole mix-up. So, yeah, we'll see. Kind of goes back to my whole thing of, the here and the now. And so when we get that call and they let us know, then go to that one.
Alexander Gustin did pick up a big win. Another big win on the night in the light heavyweight division was Ryan Bader with an absolutely brutal destruction of Ilir Tiefi. So brutal, in fact, that myself and Simon Head were captured on television just with our mouths wide open because that was like, oh!
Yeah, that was crazy. That was crazy. I happened to be walking in. I think we just finished our last interview of the prelim fighters. So I was walking in, and as I was walking in, the knee hit, and I just saw his head bounce off the canvas, and like everyone in the back was just like, I just stepped back. I just couldn't. I was like, this, like, we're actually interviewing someone, and then I couldn't remember who it was.
Shocking.
Yeah. I can't remember who it was. No. It was Peter Sabota. We're talking
you
to Peter.
You couldn't remember
someone. Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah. We're talking to Peter.
Jamaican.
And then I walked in, and his head bounced off the canvas, and I was like, oh my God.
It was incredible. I had Bader in this fight. I think Bader, I think he's criminally underrated. I mean, like, what he's accomplished in his career, the record that he has, the fact that he's been competing at a high level for so long. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's his personality, maybe it's his fighting style, I don't know. But, he just doesn't get much love. But the dude is a good fighter. But I will say this, all week long, knowing that Ilir is training at American Top Team, looking at the physical shape that he's in right now, I was like, whoa, this is going to be dangerous. And Ilir came out and was throwing bombs on the feet early on. Not to say that it wasn't going Bader's way, but it wasn't like Bader was in there just on cruise control, man. There was some heavy stuff coming back at him.
Absolutely. It was one of those Bader was throwing some pretty heavy stuff himself. He hit Latifi with a body kick that had you and me literally lean back in our seats and wincing.
Yeah, because it was right in front of us, like on that side. It was like, oh!
It was like he hit him with a baseball bat, but Latifi's made out of cast iron. You could sell advertising space on those traps of his. He's a tank of a man.
Phil Davis's traps just get a little bit embarrassed.
But as that first round went on, because I think Bader started the better of the two, but as the round went on, you could see Latifi's confidence just build and build. And at the end of the round, right at the end of that round, he dropped Bader.
I haven't seen these.
He dropped him with a big right hand. He caught Bader circling off the fence, timed it perfectly, overhand right, bang, dropped him. And Bader just about managed to scramble back to his feet as the siren went. So going into the second round, I'm thinking Latifi's going to win this fight because he was the guy in the ascendancy.
It
hurt Bader already, and he was the man with the confidence. Bader's been starched before. He had Glover Teixeira up against the fence in trouble, and then Teixeira just dinged him with a big right hand and finished him like that. So, you know, he's been stopped like that before, and Latifi's already hurt him. But in that second round, my goodness, it was reminiscent, and we spoke about this afterwards, it was reminiscent of the Michael Venom Page knockout of Evangelista Cyborg at Bellator, was it 158, was it?
158.
In London. Because it was such a brutal knockout, but it was all about the timing. And it was one of those where he threw the technique, but it coincided perfectly with Latifi ducking in and driving forward. Mm-hmm. So it just multiplied the power of the strike. And Latifi literally flew backwards. The only other time I've seen someone fly backwards like that after a knee is look back at the first fight between Jose Aldo and Chad Mendes.
Yes.
When Mendes hit him with a knee and he literally flew through the air backwards. It's very, very similar to that.
Yeah.
That was it. And all kudos and credit as well to Ryan Bader. He knew the fight was done. He went as if he was going to follow up, saw clearly he was out, and just stood up and put his arms in the air and walked away.
Going back to what John was saying about Bader being an underrated fighter, that's exactly the train of thought I had going into this fight. Like I said, we were in the back interviewing Peter Sabota. I remember everything now. I'll get in second one now.
He's back in the room, ladies and gentlemen.
The German, there was a German outlet there, I think it's Ground and Pound, and they were hogging the interview. They were just speaking to him in German.
Shots fired.
And there was no, shots fired. There was no...
England v. Germany.
There was no... they were asking questions, and I had to ask them to... translate.
Not allowing for a translation.
Give some translation here, otherwise we're just filming. Yeah, okay. So, and then I was like, Elias coming out now, guys. Do you mind if we just quickly ask our questions so we can get back in? Because this is going to be a quick fight.
Right.
And I was, completely under it. And then I walked in, bang, he got knocked out.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so.
I'll be interested to see what comes next to Ryan Bader. Interesting to hear him say, not really thinking about a title run. I don't think he's saying, and I think it was easy to get misinterpreted, and I think even the magnificent one, Stephen Morocco, was kind of like, oh, so you're saying you've given – I think he said it to actually Josh Barnett. He's like, well, you've heard Ryan say he's giving up on a title shot. I don't think that's what he was saying. I think what he was saying was – you know, and it's funny because I had talked to Ryan Bader in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They did a golf tournament and a charity golf tournament. Went and talked to him there. It just happened to be in town that week of that fight week. And he had said the exact same thing, which was like, listen, I'm not even thinking about it anymore. He's like, man, I'm at a point in my career where I've got to relax. I've got to have fun. I've got to enjoy myself. I think that's smart. He said he just put too much pressure on himself in the past to perform, and that kept him from performing the way he wanted to perform. So now he's got himself in a good place. Aaron Simpson, his head coach, is become a good friend of mine over the years, and he feels like Ryan's in a really good place mentally. And I think there's some interesting stuff out there. I mean, I see a couple of options. Number one, a guy like a Nikita Krylov, who's like kind of that, is Nikita the real deal or is he not? You know, when he came in, he started to be like kind of a novelty act, and now he's starting to be a legit fighter. Or maybe like a Shogun Hua or something like that, where, I don't know that there's necessarily – big fights available for Shogun right now, and that'd be a name for Ryan Bader. Maybe he could do something in Brazil.
Or Alex Gustafsson.
That was thrown out there. That would make some sense. Honestly, it would make sense.
The John Jones fight is the one that I think we would all pick.
That's the one I want to see.
But if the John Jones fight is not on the table,
yeah,
I think the Ryan Bader fight would probably be...
I would like it to be the biggest fight you could make.
The next biggest you could do for
him. If John Jones is suspended for 2 years, I don't think that's going to happen. Mm. If he's suspended for a year, I think might happen. I think it's more going to be 6 months or 9 months. But if he's suspended and they do Johnson-Cormier, then, yeah, I like that fight. Bader Gustafsson would be good.
Yeah, I think the light heavyweight division is in need of fresh blood and new talent rising up the ranks. You mentioned Nikita Krylov. He's one who's been earmarked as a potential talent. Mm-hmm. Corey Anderson has done relatively well. He's got a bit of a gap to bridge to get to there, but I think he's got the potential.
Yep.
Jan Blachowicz, having granted he lost today, I think he showed us something today to suggest that with a few tweaks to his game, maybe he could bridge that gap and become a lower top five guy. And seeing some of that today, and obviously Latifi as well. Latifi was doing very well, and I tweeted it earlier today. I tweeted a clip of the knockout, and I said, you know, these UFC guys can take some serious punishment, but I don't think there is a fighter on the roster who could have survived that knee.
Oh, hell no.
So given that that was a one-in-a-million knockout.
Bader needs to get on a plane and get home before they file charges against him. That was some criminal shit.
So Latifi is no busted flush after that.
No.
You know, he was doing well. He showed major improvements in his game. And
he had massive crowd support.
Yeah, he did.
You know what I mean? Like, I think he's become like a fan favorite.
There's still more to come from Ilir Latifi, for sure.
What girl do you keep looking at?
It's that Nick Dalby just walked past here, and I just like gave him a wink, like, and he tried to do the same, but he's got broken orbital, and and he just winced in like pain. Just, I felt so bad.
Use the other eye, Nick.
He tried. My bad, Nicholas.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too funny. All right, well.
That's a good segue, that.
I was about to say, we better jump up and go apologize to Nicholas Dalby. And while we do that, listen to Ryan Bader. By the way, Simon, did you use the Bader Masters or anything like that?
Do you know, I didn't. I bottled it in the end. I was going to be
King of the pun, and I mean, that was a masterful Bader.
A masterful Bader performance.
Knocks out.
Oh no! Yeah, you should have. Oh, that's a perfect
one. If Latifi had won, I'd have done it. Latifi Masters Bader.
Oh, that'd have been amazing. You would get away with that too, only in England.
Yeah, I might have had a phone call.
All right, we're gonna go apologize to Nicholas Dalby. While we do that, you listen to Darth Ryan Bader.
Ryan, you had mentioned, you know, coming into this fight, it was about relaxing, having fun, getting back to that. Did that translate into the cage tonight? Did it feel different for you?
Yeah, felt good. Just in, you know, the hotel all this week, and I got to a point when, you know, I had 5 wins in a row, and I was always looking for the next thing, a title shot or this and that, and then had a terrible fight last fight, and I just let the pressure kind of build up and get to me. So, you know, my team and I just decided, you know, hey, we need to have fun with this, get back to old school where we go, we train, we have fun, we go on these fights, and we're fortunate enough to be here in Germany in a new place, fighting in front of new fans. And so even in the locker room, I felt good and relaxed. And that's when I fight my best. So that was kind of our mindset going in. And it kind of allows me to open up, take more risks.
And I read in your quote afterwards that you gave to the UFC team, you said, listen, I don't really care who's next. I've already fought, you know, a who's who list. So does that mean that you're kind of done thinking about title runs at this point in your career?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's, I mean, that's my mindset right now. Just go out there, whoever they give me, go out there, not make a big deal about it. You know, when I'm out there, it kind of frees me to go out there, take risks, have fun, you know, and I fight better. I get too calculated when I'm worried about winning the whole time. And so that's just kind of my mindset right now.
Yeah, you've been previously criticized a bit for getting too many decisions. Today you get this big knockout. How does it feel to kind of silence the critics a bit?
It feels good. You know, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, I got in a mode of going out there and winning, you know, at all costs. I've been taught that since I was a little kid, you know, wrestling since I was 7 years old. You go out there and win. And if you're in a tournament and there's a bracket, you win regardless of what happens. You pin them or you win by 1 point, you go on to the next one and the next one. You know, so I got in that mode. And so that's what I'm talking about when I'm saying, like, having fun and not taking it too seriously. You know, because I got in that mode of winning is everything. I go out there and win at all costs and maybe not take risks that I need to or whatnot. And so that's what I'm talking about with this fight. I wanted to go out there, have fun out there, and, you know, show some new things, take risks, and you know, be free out there, kind of sounds silly, but, you know, open up. And I believe I fight better that way. And like Josh was saying, it's not always about winning or losing. You know, it's going out there and, you know, proving to myself that I know that I'm that fighter. You know, leaving there and coming out, that I gave my all and I did what I'm capable of. Because there's a lot of fights where I feel like, you know, I didn't show who I was in there. So that's my whole mindset right now.
All right, so Ryan Bader did pick up a big victory. I mean, that really was just a highlight reel knockout, man. That's one that will be on the sizzle reel for him for a long time to come, no doubt about it. The main event kicked off with Nick Hyam picking up a decision win over Tai Yun Bang. You know, good for Nick. You know, a good dude, an interesting story. Fernando Prachis wrote a great story about him. The guy's got just an incredible background. You know, his police background, acting, you know, all kinds of other stuff. I mean, he's got a cool story. This was just not a great fight. And I think it was one of those kind of weird clash of styles where it looked like both guys were trying to counter each other. And when you have two guys trying to counter each other, somebody's got to go first, and nobody wanted to go first.
Yeah, with Nick Hyam, he's suffered with injuries. He's basically gone. He was training to fight in London. That didn't work mm-hmm. out. He then went through a full training camp to fight John Tuck at mm-hmm. UFC Fight Night in Rotterdam and picked up a prolapsed disc. I think loading his lap or taking a laptop out of his bag at an airport. Yeah. Prolapsed disc. His doctor
disc on Amazon.com the other day.
And his doctor told him, "Your career might be finished. You need to manage."
Yeah, that's scary.
You
man.
Need to anything to do with the back and the nerve, you know, the spinal nerve and all the rest of it.
Yeah, man.
You can't be too careful
like that,
with stuff like that. So he had to be very careful with his rehab. So he had a lot of time out dealing with that. He then did another training camp. He was training over in the US with Anthony Hardon.
Yeah, he's in California now.
Yeah, and I believe he's relocating out there
that's
as well.
That's right, moving out there full time.
Oh. And so he came into this fight with a fair amount of ring rust on him, but having trained, no fight, trained, no fight, and now trained, finally he's got a fight. I think he did what he needed to do to win. I think for him to actually get through and win the fight was enough of a success for him. And it's really what he does in his next fight, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
But we've had this, we were having this discussion on the way here. I mean, like, if Nick
if Tai Yun Hyam.
Yeah, Nick Hyam had hands, he would be... If Nick Hyam had hands, like, knockout power, or some power behind those punches, we would be talking about him completely differently.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not being funny, but every fight I've seen of Nick Hyam, I think, has gone to decision,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And he's a potential star because he's a media darling. We love him.
Incredibly well spoken.
Yeah, we love to speak to him, and he's so enthusiastic to speak to the media. He could be something big. It's just that he doesn't perform well when it comes to the stage, you know what I mean?
He needs that breakthrough fight, doesn't he? Every fighter, when they join the UFC, first thing, find your feet. Next thing, have a breakthrough moment.
Yeah, and he hasn't.
And he hasn't quite had that yet. And as you say, he's an absolute star to deal with. Lovely bloke to deal with, away from the cage, and he gets in there. And to me, he looks like he's got the tools to actually do it. It's just, he just hasn't found his sweet spot just yet. Maybe he needs the right opponent. You know, everyone has the right opponent, and they just click, and then bang, it takes them, all puns intended, it takes them to the next level, and then they never look back from there. And maybe that's what Nick Hyam needs. He needs to find, he needs the right dance partner.
I agree.
And I think we'll see him kick on from there.
Let's talk about the prelims. Justin Ayari picked up a split decision win over Jim Wallhead. Abby, I want to hear from you maybe. I don't know if you guys were busy during this fight or kind of what things were in the back. The reason I want to ask you is because I know what my colleague here, Simon Head, thinks about it because we were sitting next to each other. You know, here we are, two mixed martial arts journalists, literally shoulder to shoulder. I mean, so we have essentially the exact same point of view. Our job is completely to watch fights, and that's it. We don't cover other beats. We only cover mixed martial arts. So it's not like we have, you know, other sporting things that take our time. We literally focus on the sport 24/7. We watched a fight, and we came up with incredibly different results. It was exactly what the judges who are paid to render results gave. I mean, 29-28, 28-29, 30-27, Justin Ayari. I personally scored the fight for Justin Ayari. I gave him the first two rounds. I gave Jim Wallhead the third round, so I had it 29-28, Justin Ayari. I think, did you have 30-27 the other way?
I had 30-27, Jim Wallhead.
30-27, Jim Wallhead. So the scores that were given, I mean, it's all over the place.
My score was the only one that the judges didn't give, in fairness.
Well, I mean, in fairness.
But I think there were three competitive rounds, and all three rounds, I would concede, were quite tough to score because of the nature of the fight. Ayari was backpedaling for the entire fight.
Right.
So from a perception point of view, you have to kind of, because octagon control is the last criteria.
Right.
When scoring a fight.
And it won't even be a criteria here not that long from now.
There you go. So it's all about the effectiveness of the striking. There was no grappling involved, right? So
right.
We're basically talking about the effective striking involved, and it's how you read it. My personal opinion was that Wallhead, yes, he was pushing the pace,
right.
But he was also the guy, I think, his work rate was higher. I actually thought he was... He dropped Ayari in the first. He dropped Ayari in the third. I thought Ayari's best round, which is kind of interesting given how you scored the fight, was the last round. I thought he was finding his groove. That, you know, the longer the fight went on, but I still think Wallhead did just enough to win. He didn't dominate any of the rounds, but I think he nicked all three of them. And my timeline, obviously I'm a British journalist.
Yeah.
A lot of people who follow me are
sure,
from the UK.
Like, ah,
I was getting the whole robbery thing coming back. And I wouldn't say robbery, but I do think he can count himself very unlucky to have lost that fight.
Here's the thing, that's what I want to hear from you, Abby, because I'll give my quick thoughts as well, is that like I thought, because it does seem like in mixed martial arts, aggression, moving forward, essentially earns you points. I mean, whether you're getting the best of it or not, if you're coming forward, for the most part, generally I think judges and fans like the guy that's moving forward. And
it's
so
easy to see, isn't it?
It is.
You know.
Meanwhile, Justin Ayari, I thought, and this is another one of those fights that that's why I can't wait to hear what you have to say, Abby. And I think what you're probably going to tell me is I didn't get to watch the fight because I was busy, so that's going to totally blow up in my face. But the thing was, moving forward is great. But I thought as he was retreating, he was slipping and countering, and doing a fantastic job and really landing the best shots and doing, you know, quality work. So, Abby, with the biggest setup of all time, please tell me you got to watch
John.
It. You were deep in the edit?
I was deep in the edit, but.
He scored a draw.
Because it was... our boy Jibby, yeah.
A British guy.
He trains in London Shoot Fighters with my boy Michael Venom Page, you know.
Yep.
So, like, I had to try and pay attention, you know.
You London boys got to
stick
together.
Exactly.
Huh?
So I kept looking up. But every time I looked up, I saw Ayari on the back foot. Mm-hmm. But every time I looked up, he was on the back foot landing clean, significant strikes.
Yes.
Wallhead was walking forward. Yeah, he looked like the aggressor. But... he was getting tagged with these significant strikes.
Yes.
Right? And when we asked him, like, it's quite funny because we interviewed Peter before
right.
Ayari.
Right.
It's all coming back to me now. We asked Sabota what he thought.
You smelled that weed right now, didn't you?
Yeah.
And that's how you get to talk.
That's cigar smoke. That's no weed.
I was having fun. We were doing a podcast. I was kind of taking some creative liberty.
All right. Yeah. See, you don't fuck the... Oh, no. I've gone now. Hold on. Yeah, we spoke to Peter Sabota. And Peter Sabota was late out to interview because he was watching Ayari fight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so we were late. There was a big delay in him coming for the interview. Okay. So when we asked Peter Sabota... what he thought, he said that he even thought that Ayari was on the back foot too much.
Mm.
Right? And then I mentioned that to Ayari, who if you check out the interview on MMAJunkie.com, cheap plug.
Cheap plug. Well, that's not cheap plug, it's our show. So
yeah,
cool.
Okay. Yeah, if I... yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Stop it, man. You're throwing me off my...
Off your what, Abby?
I don't know.
So you're okay. So it sounds with Ayari.
I asked Ayari, he said basically he's got that Mayweather counter-striking.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah. That's what he said. Check the interview.
No. He may have said it.
Yeah, but he doesn't have it.
All right, I'm just saying that.
My God, I hope we use that in the headline. He actually said Mayweather. I haven't seen it yet.
He said something. Mayweather counter-striking.
Wow.
So, and the funny thing is, I said sarcastically, my bad, but I said sarcastically, oh, he's using that Mayweather counter-striking while I was editing.
Right.
You know, I just looked up, oh, he's on the back foot using that Mayweather counter-striking. And he said it in the interview.
That's incredible. I thought he did well. It's good. I will say, this is the one fight I'm going to go watch again.
I want to watch again as well.
Just seeing the scores everywhere, all over the world, I want to go watch again and see if, you know, maybe I was getting the wrong feel. I don't know. We'll find out. So I think we'll see Jim Walhead again, though. I know this was long-awaited debut and a disappointing loss for him, I'm sure, but I think we'll see him again.
Get him on the Belfast card.
Absolutely, 100%.
I noticed today that he's got a London Shoot Fighters tattoo on his stomach.
He's only been training with him for relatively short spot of time.
That's dedication.
That's what's up. All right, let's talk about, you mentioned his name, Peter Sobota. Jamaica's own Peter Sobota. Now, this was a tough one because, you know, Nicholas Dalby has become a good friend of the MMA Roadshow, of MMA Junkie, of The Sun. He's a good dude. He's personable. He likes to hang out and talk, and he's open and honest, and he's walking around with he said his orbital broke. He told us his orbital broke on the first punch of the night.
It was the punch that knocked him down. It was the knockdown.
Damn.
Which was a big shot.
Damn.
Yeah.
So to have a broken orbital and to continue to fight on with that, I give him credit, man. He's scrappy. He got through, but Peter Sobota looked. I thought Peter Sobota looked fantastic tonight. To be honest with you, I thought he was on point. I thought Nicholas never quit, continued to fight, tried to make some changes, tried to do anything he could. Came out in the third, knew he was behind. Came out trying to be aggressive. I mean, just everything he did went wrong. Peter Sobota looked fantastic, but Abby, maybe you can share backstage because just an interesting schedule that. He's basically representing Jamaica now. He had the Jamaica flag. It was Simon Head who put out the incredible video earlier this week. If you didn't check that out, make sure you check him out on Twitter.
At Simon Head.
I will say Abby helped edit it. But don't tell our bosses at MMA Junkie that. But he helped him out with some of the special effects. But anyway, it came out pretty funny that here's a guy who basically shares two nations' heritage and says, to hell with both of those. I'm going to represent Jamaica because I like reggae, which I think means I like weed. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well,
Abby, are you a fan of reggae music?
I love reggae music. The funny thing is, when Peter came back, because earlier...
Do you listen to your reggae music in a bong, or do you listen to your reggae music in a joint usually, or do you listen to your reggae music in a pipe? How do you listen to your reggae music?
Mom, John is drunk and he's talking mess, okay? All right, so listen. God.
You were talking about the tweet, weren't you?
Yes, Simon's tweet. Peter Sobota retweeted it today with the caption, Jah bless. Yes.
And a little Jamaican flag.
And a little Jamaican flag.
Awesome.
So when he came to the back, I looked at him and I said, Jah bless, and he looked at the camera and went, Jah bless, and I was like, yes. And I looked at the camera and I hadn't pressed record yet. So
Abby's had an absolute flyer today.
Yeah.
This is an intervention, by the way. This is not actually a podcast.
Yeah.
This is an intervention.
So I hadn't pressed record yet, and I was like, damn. So the interview started. The interview started, and he gave us the usual, post-fight interview. But he did mention that, you know, he had that operation where he in Brazil where he caught some sort of bacterial infection that almost killed him.
I didn't know that.
Well, he had that fight with the Australian dude. He got knocked out by the Australian.
Well, I'm supposed to remember every damn fight. Kyle Noak.
So yeah, he.
That was in Australia.
Yes, but he took a kick. It was the kick to the area where he just had the operation, right?
Right.
And so basically he had the operation and he, It was more psychological than anything because it had properly healed. But when he took the blow there,
it scared the shit out of him.
It scared the shit out of him. And that's what he said in the interview. Oh, check it out on MMAJunkie.com.
Cheap plug.
Right. So, so he gave us that interview. And then at the end, when the interview is finished, I was like, I've got to get that job less. So I asked him, can you look into the camera and just, you know, give us a job less? And he gave us the... He looked at the camera and he said, I can't remember what he said.
Ironically, Abby's about to be jobless.
Nah, he said... he said jobless. He said jobless. I'm about peace. I love peace.
Of God.
But I'm ready for war. That's what he said. Yeah, the fucking cock striker, yeah?
All right, let's talk about the women's matchup. Ashley Evans-Smith defeated Veronica Macedo, TKO, third round. Ashley Evans-Smith, brutal finish. But I got to say, I don't want to take away from Ashley Evans-Smith. I'm impressed by Veronica Macedo. I think she's in the wrong division. I don't think she's a bantamweight. I think she's a strawweight. I actually ended up talking to some people behind the scenes who said that they talked to her about perhaps being a strawweight, and she said, no, I'm not a strawweight. I'm a bantamweight. Of course, there isn't that flyweight. You can't do 125. And, you know, Simon and I both talked to some people this week. We're like, hey, what about that 125? Come on, throw that 125. And they're like, dude, it's not going to happen right now. We don't have enough shows. We don't have enough slots. If we added another division, we'd be screwed. We're struggling to get the fighters that we do have fights. You know, it's not going to happen. So get 125 out of your head, at least for now. It'll be great, and I think it'll happen someday. But as far as we're talking about immediate plans, it's not going to happen. I know it would be a big cut. She's 20 years old. She's tiny. She's not big. I mean, you look at the stare down pictures. I mean, she's not big. So, I don't want to take away from Ashley Evans-Smith. I think Ashley Evans-Smith had a great performance. I think she and I think Simon, you agree. I mean, I've known her for some time, but you know, I think this is one of your first real exposure to her. That she has the ability to potentially be a star in the sport. She's so well spoken. She's so fantastic. But I want to say, I mean, I'm walking away from this fight feeling like there were two winners. I feel like Veronica lost, but showed that, dude, if she can step up and go to 115, maybe she'll try 135 again on a full training camp. Remember, she stepped in for Jermaine Diarrandami. Maybe she'll try 135 one more time with a full training camp, but I'd love to see her at 115. But this is a fight where I feel like both fighters walked out with, like, thumbs up.
Totally agree. Veronica, the one interesting thing about Mercedes, her post-fight comments said, If I have a full training camp, I finish her in the first round.
That was great, right?
That's
that was on the flash quotes. You know, the ballsy UFC sends that out to say, like, yeah, I know I got lost, but I know I lost in the third round, but we did it again.
She started really well. She started really well in that fight. I think the first notable strike she threw was a spinning back kick that landed absolutely perfectly in the solar plexus. And Ashley Evans-Smith,
her face was looking right at us.
Yeah. Because I said to you, is she grinning or is she grimacing? Because normally you try and poker face this sort of thing. She hit her hard with that body
kick. The first strike of the night hurt her.
And
it did not. She said had no power behind it. Check
so she
out
was grinning
on MMAJunkie.com.
Check out her face in the first round.
I thought she was grimacing. Yeah.
I'd really?
I saw that.
I you managed to right? look up and I saw the spinning back kick.
It was
and
solid.
And it did look like she grimaced, but... When she said she caught me with that, but had no power behind it.
God bless her, man. I'll have to go back and watch. I'm going to watch the interview, which I haven't seen yet because we've been working. I'm going to watch that, and I'm going to go watch that. That's another one I'm going to watch back because I was impressed with both of them. Abby, you did get to interview Ashley Evans-Smith at the end. Simon's been high on her this week, said, like, I just love the interviews that she gives. I love, like, the how well-spoken she is, how open and honest she is. I mean, what did you take?
That's the first time I've met her. We were having this discussion on the cab ride back. I said, if Ashley Evans-Smith can step up her game, like, she wants a rematch with Raquel Pennington. Mm-hmm. That's what she said. She wants that one back. If the UFC use her right, she's a potential superstar. She carries herself very well with the media, and she's well spoken. She's not bad to look at, you know. But yeah, it was
She, yeah.
I mean, it's funny you say that. I mean, I know it's kind of awkward to say that sometimes, but like you can say, I mean, you're not saying it the wrong way. It is true.
I'm not saying it in a way, but yeah.
Visually, Mark, it sounds, for a bunch of men to say that about women, it does sound weird sometimes. But the truth is, marketing, when you're talking about marketing, like, it doesn't hurt that Conor McGregor isn't a bad-looking dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't hurt that whoever, you know what I mean? Like, it's okay. I mean, it sounds weird when you're talking about women, especially when you're covering those women.
I'll say the same thing about Alexander Gustafsson. I'll say the same thing about, you know.
100%.
That's a fantastic-looking man.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a bizarre.
Stop looking at me like that, Simon.
All right. Let's talk about Taylor Lapoulos. The Frenchman, I think the best performance that we've ever seen. I mean, it seems like we get a lot of Taylor over here in Europe. You know, the UFC is trying to make those inroads into France, and it sounds like the battles for legalization are happening. We've seen him a couple of times. I thought he looked fantastic tonight.
He did, and against Leandro Issa, who is a third degree jiu-jitsu black belt. That's a fighter with a maybe not a one trick pony, but the trick he's got is pretty flipping useful, you know. And he pursued that takedown like a dog pursues a bone in that first round. He was relentless. And he managed to get Taylor down on at least one occasion. And he managed to defend really well. And when he got back up, he'd obviously had enough of being having his legs grabbed. He's like, right, I'm going to light this guy up.
Oh, man. His boxing looked crisp.
He looked crisp. It was the snap in his punches. It was his footwork, his movement. He always stayed in the pocket, but was a constant moving target. And it was pow, 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 pow. It was constant moving, fast strikes, in and out.
I loved it. It was my favorite fight of Taylor Lapoulos so far.
Absolutely. And he's a guy who they need to obviously build him gradually and carefully. But as you say, with them looking to move into France, he's someone who potentially could really be a benefit to the UFC in the coming months.
I agree. All right, Christian Colombo, Jardis Dano, declared a majority draw. I had it 29-27. There was one score that way. I had it 29-27. There were two scores of 28-28. Again, you were sitting right next to me. You had that 28-28.
Yeah.
I don't think either one of us was looking at the other guy going like, what are you thinking, dude? I mean, it was just this really close fight. There was the point deduction, which factored in. There's no reason to spend a lot of time talking about this fight. I will say this. I think the point deduction was right. Mark Ratner came up and talked to us and said, hey, what do you guys think about that point deduction? You know, one of the reasons we did it, one of the reasons Mark thought that it was right was, you know, it was a severe enough infraction that it caused a cut. I mean,
so for
an illegal blow to cause an injury like that that could potentially
affect the rest fight, of the fight. Yeah, yeah.
Definitely affects the rest of the fight. Yeah. So I think the point was warranted. Now, what is interesting, though, is, you know, the whole definition of a grounded fighter and the change that the ABC approved and how that changes, because I will say this. Jardis Dano, the Man Mountain. I love that nickname. It's incredible. But, dude, as powerful and as scary of a dude as that is when he throws those massive hooks, like a strategy of moving forward and then ducking your head and putting your hands on the ground so that you've got the protection of a down fighter. Like, I think literally this fight is the exact reason why the rule is being changed.
Yeah, and a bit further down the line, I think the rule's going to come in start of 2017, if I remember correctly. If that incident happens in January next year, that's a legal strike. So we're working within the rule set that we currently have. It really wasn't a good fight. It was everything that the main event wasn't.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I said, no reason to spend too much time on it. It is heavyweight MMA. These things happen in heavyweight MMA. But I don't know, man. I just – bizarre. That strategy was just – it's not good. To me, again, that was the perfect example of why we're changing the rule, and I think that shows why it's a good rule change. Jack Hermanson versus Scott Askham, a fight that you and I were both looking forward to, Simon. I thought Jack Hermanson looked fantastic. Scott Askham has been up and down. Might still be mentally scarred from the way you treated his last opponent in London. Perhaps that was really to what happened here. But, you know, it wasn't Scott Askham's best performance. But, and maybe didn't turn out to be the all-out battle that we thought it would be, but it was still a fun fight, I thought, and I thought Jack Hermanson, you know, I'm not trying to say the guy's, you know, a future champion just yet, but I really do like the way he fights, man. I think he shows some real physical tools in there.
He's one of these guys who whoever gets matched up with him is going to be in for a difficult night, win or lose. Watching the fight, they're both big, rangy middleweights. And Askam, I thought, shaded the opening round. I thought he started the fight quite well. And Hermanson maybe had a little bit of the octagon jitters on his debut, perhaps. But we could see the way he was moving around. I think, he was almost trying to suss Askam out, I think, in the opening round. Then he picked a pace up in round two and round three. And it was noticeable that by the middle of round two, Askam's gas tank looked like it had pretty much run dry.
Mm-hmm.
And Hermanson was winning in the clinch. Mm-hmm. And it was the clinch that won Hermanson that fight, because at range, Askam was doing quite well. First round, he was finding a home for that straight left. Askam was finding a home for the straight left. Hermanson was almost exclusively throwing oblique kicks in that first round.
Mm-hmm.
But then Hermanson started to close that distance, and when it got to the clinch, he was having a lot of joy with the uppercut. He was having a lot of joy with the short elbows. By the end of the third round, he was lighting Askam up and landing some big, clean shots that even the guys on the back row could see and were getting excited about.
Abby
and,
looks like he's returned to consciousness briefly.
I'm back.
What do you think about it?
All
right, so Rustam Khabibov versus Leandro Silva. Rustam Khabibov, listen, I mean, he's a fantastic wrestler. I thought it was clear that he won this fight. I think Khabibov is one of the toughest dudes in this division, but I think he's going to always struggle to get fans.
He's not got a marketable fight style.
It's funny, like, we were talking about this card, and you're like, here's a dude, I think their records going in were like 19-3-1 versus 19-4. In the first fight of a Fight Pass fight, you're like,
this could be
shit,
good.
That's
this
high quality.
You
that's
know, he's
quality.
Fought three times this year. He fought in the London card, the Rotterdam card, and this card.
Khabibov? So they put him all in Europe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he has visa issues.
He's got
right?
visa
he's
issues.
Having
visa he's got. Like you said, he's going to struggle to gain fans. He just called out the entire lightweight division and someone that just dropped to featherweight. You know, there's two. He called out.
Oh, fuck it.
He called out Pettis and
Edson Barboza.
Edson, and then in his post fight, he called in the interview in the back. He also called out Gilbert Melendez and Michael Johnson. It's like
he's casting his net pretty wide. So, yeah,
he did say the only way I'm going to progress is if I call for big fights now.
I understand the thinking. Sometimes. Put him in there with a guy who's...
Blachowicz over there.
He is.
Ooh. He got marked up a little bit too.
I'm not surprised. He spent two rounds underneath Alexander Gustafsson's elbows. So
okay.
But he had a pretty good night even though he lost, I think. But back to this. returning to the plot. Someone's got to keep hold of this flipping show. We've got... Leandro Silva, Buscape. Yeah. Buscape Silva looks to me like he's got a lot of skills. He, you know, his striking looked good. His footwork looked good. His takedown defense was good because Khabibov is a beast when it comes to takedowns. And in the main, he stuffed most of them. The issue with Leandro Buscape Silva was work rate. Output.
Yeah,
there just wasn't enough of it.
Dude, when he was throwing, he was actually landing. You know what I mean? Like,
he
was
having
success. He just wasn't doing enough. So,
yeah.
I will say this, though. Props to Khabibov for speaking in English, calling out in English. Like,
that's the first time I've seen that, I think.
That's the first time I've seen it. Yeah. I had no idea he could do that.
The funny thing is, like, he at the start of the interviews at the back, he goes, you can ask me. I'm going to answer in English. So I think Louise asked the first question. Louise from MMA Crazy asked the first question.
He was like, whoa, I didn't know you were asking that accent.
She asked a question, and he just looked at his translator straight away.
His translator's on the phone. You said you had this covered.
That's fantastic. Well, listen, I think it's great that he's making call-outs like that. It's cool to see a dude, you know, working hard to learn English. The visa issues, Merbeck Tyson off. Having some visa issues, just got pulled off the card in Cleveland next week. So,
he's someone I'm excited about.
I agree. it's intriguing. I mean, the UFC has enough international events that you can probably build yourself and build a name as somebody that can't fight in the U.S. I mean, it's not like it totally, like, you know, rules you out. Like, if you were trying to fight for Bellator and you couldn't get a U.S. visa, like, nah, you're kind of fucked. You know what I mean? But in the UFC, like, nah, you can still build your name. But, I mean, you guys know as European fight fans and European journalists that, you know, the biggest fights are always going to take place in Vegas. They're always going to take place in the States. That's where, at some point, you got to be able to get there. So, anyway, all right, well, listen, there is a table full of frosty beverages. There is also a ticking clock here because I got to go catch a plane. Literally, I'm going to upload this, and then I'm going to jump in a taxi.
But once you're leaving before me.
Yeah, exactly. So I've got to get the hell out of here. But I just want to say, as always, it was a pleasure. Simon Head has become kind of an unofficial part of the Junkie team at this point. Abby did a fantastic job as well. Pair, amazing photographs all week long. I didn't have to pick up a camera once, which was awesome. So if you like the photography, man, you got to look up Pair. He did a fantastic job. And I got to pee really bad, so I'm just going to say.
Peace, love, and unity, no. And job bless.
Yeah, you're going to be jobless if you ever do this again.
Jobless. I just got that. I didn't understand that earlier.
Shocking. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
Boom, boom. 1, 2, 3. Come back, give me a little quick test.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Please tell me you're recording that.
Save that one, cold coffee.
So. Yeah, yeah.
All right, you guys good?
All good, all good, yep.
Okay, let's see. All right. I was actually making a valid point there, and then I just, something happened, like, it's like, boom.
You had an out-of-body experience for a minute there, are you okay?
I did.
You sure?
Yeah.
Out-of-brain experience.
Fuck.
All right.
Fuck you, Kenny. We'll be right back.